Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific.
Kaboom!
If you thought 4 hours a day, 1,200 minutes a week was enough, think again. He's the last remnants of the old republic. A sole bastion of fairness. He treats crackheads in the ghetto gutter the same as the rich pill poppers in the penthouse.
Wow.
The clearinghouse of hot takes break free for something special. The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller starts right now.
In the air, everywhere. We are back at it. The podcast was on sabbatical. A lot longer than it was supposed to be on sabbatical, but we are back this weekend. Good to have you along with us. The global reach of iHeart podcasting available wherever you get your podcast. You already found it, so you know that. And we do this podcast now. Back at it for 2021, 8 days a week, because 4 hours a night, clearly not enough in the overnight. And back against his will. He did not want to do this. There was a lot of pushback to do the podcast this week. David Gascon is back west of the 405.
That's right.
Podcast.
That's right.
I had to twist your arm a little bit, Gascon. You did not want to come in here and do this. You had other things you wanted to do, but not the podcast.
I don't know if it's twisting my arm as much as it's pouting, but you can call it twisting. I can call it pouting.
You had a little Kyrie moment.
This
podcast wears you out.
Kyrie was taking off work to do nothing. I don't take off work to do nothing. I take off work to do other work.
Well, no, Kyrie took off work to go on a Zoom call for a political candidate in New York City and go to parties. He's a little frazzled, but he's doing okay.
I did not see that photo until you sent it to me. And then when you sent it to me, I thought, okay, I need to slowly go through this because there's something in here that he wants me to see. And then one by one, I started. It's like a bingo card, right? That's exactly what it was when I started looking at everyone that was on that Zoom call.
So just to give the story. So a friend of mine sends me this text. Hey, guess who's not at the Nets game tonight? But it's obvious. And then it was Kyrie on a Zoom call with like a bunch of other. It looked like the Brady Bunch open. There's an outdated reference. But it had, like a Zoom call. It had all these boxes and there's. There's Kyrie checking in, full of vitality there. Certainly looks fine and not playing in the game that night. I love that it was just before the start of the game, too. It was like a few minutes before the Nets game was going to start. And there's Kyrie doing his thing. Boy, has anyone gone more full Looney Tunes in sports over the last few years than Kyrie? I'm talking about recently.
Oh, no. If you're going to go full Looney Tunes, then you have to be Dennis Rodman, right? Like, don't you just have to go AWOL, go to Vegas, bang some strippers, do some coke, and then come back to work?
Well, Rodman was able to play for the Chicago Bulls while doing a lot of that. He had, occasionally he needed a vacation, as we learned in that documentary in 2020, where he had to go to Vegas and just, for whatever. But he was, and I remember when the Bulls would come to L.A. to play the Clippers, the Lakers, the stories of Rodman's activities were legendary.
Yeah.
And I mean, he didn't slow down. And it's like when I was around baseball players years ago and I traveled a little bit with the Dodgers and the guys in the bullpen, they dragged me along. I was a young guy and we went out and had a wonderful time at the different clubs in different cities. And then I was young and I hadn't lived that life and I couldn't even get out of bed in the hotel room. And then these guys are going out pitching. I remember one time it was in New York and the Mets were still playing at Shea Stadium back then. But we had a very interesting night where got back to the hotel room as the sun was rising.
Oh, man.
In Manhattan. And they had a day game against the Mets. It was a getaway game against the Mets. And a couple of guys I was out with frolicking around pitched, and I was convinced they were going to be terrible. They were fine. It's like they went on. It was their routine, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, "Wow!"
Well, isn't the old
guys
story
have like
that,
battery acid in their body?
Isn't the old story that David Wells threw his perfect game with a hangover?
Well, there's that, and then there's that pitcher from the Pirates who was on what was he on? Some kind of drug. I forget what it was, but back in the 70s. If they weren't playing well, I wanted to see someone come out and throw some haymakers.
Yeah.
And get them in line. But now, because of the way this has gone here, instead of bare knuckle boxing and some pugilism. They don't want any of that. They want. It seems like the consumer only wants positivity when it comes to this stuff. They don't want to hear anything. I mean, it's like they defend these people like they're sisters or their brothers. Mm-hmm. It's odd to me.
Yeah,
but that's the way it goes.
It's a tough line though, because there's a lot of negativity already in this world. Why have any more on top of it?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the argument, but they treat it personal.
Yeah.
I've never been that way. Listen, I love the Clippers, and when the Clippers suck, I point out that they suck. Same thing with the Dodgers and the Rams. I'm not afraid to do that. I think you should do that. I think that's a good fan. I think a bad fan is to just be a blind sheep and be a lemming, and no matter what happens, you're like, oh, it's okay, don't worry, let me drink some more Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't need the amen choir is what you don't need that.
Yeah.
So, but they say that's my opinion. So,
no, I agree.
I realize there's a lot of people in radio that now, the younger guys in radio act that way too. They don't do that much of the extreme criticism.
But their jobs are safer when they don't. You would agree that when you go looking over that edge a little bit, like if you go full blown Tony Bruno, unless you're Howard Stern, like you can't look over the edge and have a security blanket. You go over, you could fall over and just
It's always a risk assessment.
Yeah,
right. It's a risk assessment, and you have to do cost benefit analysis. Is it worth your time, right? The old risk-reward situation, and that's always been true, and it really depends. It used to be if you made enough money for the show, if you were the number one morning show or the number one afternoon drive show, you had carte blanche.
Yeah.
You could, show me the money, and people would just kowtow to you.
Mm-hmm.
But then, it's like, I remember when I was doing local stuff and the Clippers were terrible, but they were on the station, so we were told it was a partner, so we had to be careful. And I was like, what? And then it's just the game has played there and all that stuff. But hey, it's been interesting. It's good for talk radio, though. The James Harden trade. It's not good for the NBA that the employees are deciding where they're working and all that. That's not particularly great, but it's good for sports radio. And Kyrie is the gift that keeps giving. He is the cash cow. He is wonderful.
But do you feel more inclined or less inclined to watch these games, though, with these guys going in and out of the lineup?
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing, it's also without the fans, too. It's the whole deal, it's just not. I talked to Eddie about this week, and Eddie's like, he seems okay with it and cool with it.
He doesn't watch the NBA. That doesn't count.
No, I know, but he's like, he just doesn't seem to mind the lack of fans. It still bothers me. Not that I loved the cutaway shot to Joe Blow getting all excited, but just the energy, just the whole vibe and all that.
I think it depends on the sport. Like NBA, you know this. If you're at a Lakers game or a Heat game, you get those courtside shots. They're usually nines and tens that are getting looked at. But the NCAA tournament.
Those are lottery picks.
Right. The NCAA tournament, you want to get the kid crying his ass off because his team just got beat in the Sweet 16, and he thought they were going to make a run as a 12 seed. I'm down. These grown adults are just sobbing.
I don't need to see the drum major with tears running down their eyes there because their team was eliminated. As opposed to Mr. Unlimited, the quarterback of the Seahawks.
Yeah.
All right. So I did want to spend a few minutes. Many people ask about, first of all, my dad. I want to thank many of you that reached out to me. Thank you. I've not written back to everybody. It's been a very difficult time, as you might imagine. So I'm going to try to get back to everybody at some point here. There's still a lot of stuff to do as far as that is concerned. And my brother's been out from New York helping me with some of that stuff, a lot of it, actually, so I do appreciate that. And while I was away, Tommy Lasorda passed away, and I had some people that were emailing me asking me for some Tommy Lasorda stories, and I'm just going to spitball this off the top of my head here because I didn't prepare anything, per se, but my relationship with Lasorda is a pretty bizarre one, I would say, because I grew up watching the Dodgers and the Angels, not just the Dodgers, and the Angels. I grew up in Orange County, so I watched the Angels too and the Dodgers. And I watched the 88 World Series on TV with my parents, and I saw the Gibson home run and all that. But in 1994, I got a gig where I had access to cover the Dodgers. That was the first year I had media credentials to cover the Dodgers. Lasorda was still managing. So, I'm like a teenager or whatever, and I'm interviewing all these people that a few years ago I was watching on TV, and all that. It's a weird thing. So, but Lasorda was managing the team in 1994, and I covered the team the last 2.5 seasons that he managed. He left in the middle of the 96 season. I think he had a heart attack. He had a health problem, and he was replaced, I believe, by Glenn Hoffman. Was the interim manager. Then Bill Russell took over. Whatever, doesn't matter. But anyway, so, I was in awe when I was first around Lasorda. I mean, Lasorda's a bigger-than-life personality, and to see behind the scenes, behind the curtain, to see how it all operates, it was eye-opening. I was like, whoa! I was in the same... I hadn't renovated the locker room at Dodger Stadium in forever, so it was a crap locker room. But a couple things I remember about those years, the last couple years Tommy was managing the Dodgers, is he always had the buffet, the post-game buffet, in his office. So the players, if they wanted to get food, had to walk past his desk to get food. He had this big, long table. It was like it had drawers underneath it, but it was the buffet table. And so they'd bring in that night's meal, the post-game meal, and so... I recall that, and I also remember the two types of Lasorda, and this was very intimidating for a young radio stringer. Okay, because I didn't really know the rules, and I kind of learned as I went along. Most people do that. Nobody told me here's what you do, here's what you don't do. But my first two times around the Dodgers in the '94 season, I recall. Very vividly, when the Dodgers were winning, right? When they were winning, and they were like a pretty average team that year, right around 500. But when they won, you got Happy Tommy. And he wanted to talk. He couldn't wait for us media guys to come in there. And we got right next to him, put the mic right there. And he had a beaming smile talking about his team and whoever was pitching that day and all that stuff. So that was one Tommy. And then I remember when the Dodgers would lose, it was a totally different Tommy. He would be sullen, he would be down, and I recall going in there and I'd stand right next to him, put a microphone down his throat, and he would be eating. He never really, I don't remember him ever eating after they won a game, but when they lost, he would be eating in there. And like spitting food and all that stuff. I recall that very much. But Tommy was very nice to me. And they did make the playoffs in the 95 season. They made the playoffs and got swept. I think that might have been the first year of the expansion of the playoffs. They were in the divisional series. They played
Atlanta.
I think it was Cincinnati that year. I think they played Cincinnati that year. But they did not play well. That was the... If I remember correctly, Benito Santiago was playing for the Reds. He had a big home run in, I believe it was game one, if I remember correctly. But that's the year that I stood next to Marge Schott behind the batting cage. And I was like three times the size of Marge Schott.
And, did she have her dog with her?
I don't remember the dog being there that day, but I remember her wearing that red sweater, the bright red Cincinnati red sweater. And she wanted to get right behind the batting cage there to watch the guys. And I remember the players coming up to her on the Reds. And I guess you have to suck up to ownership and all that. But those were the days the Dodgers had Piazza and Karros and
Mondesi.
Jose Offerman was hanging around there. Tim Wallach was on that team. Mondy. And they had Hideo Nomo. Nomo Mania was going on. Tom Candiotti's knuckleball. He was pitching then. And
Ramon Martinez.
Yeah, Ramon Martinez was good.
Yeah.
He was a good pitcher. Unfortunately, not as good as his brother. But
they had him, too.
He was, they had him for a few.
Kind of got away from him.
Yeah, Ramon was more of like 12 to 15 game winner as opposed to a 20 game winner.
And Hall of Famer.
He's like, Ramon actually pitched a few games for the 88 Dodgers. Did you know?
Did he really?
I think not many, but he did end up on that team. And then some of the other memories about Tommy, just kind of scattershot here. I recall when Tommy couldn't manage anymore, and then eventually he was like the liaison for the Dodgers. He was the ambassador. For the rest of his life, he was the goodwill ambassador for the Dodgers. But I remember when they had him as the interim general manager, and it was one of the funniest Tommy stories. So Tommy gave this address to the assembled media. And he was going on and on about how, you guys can write whatever you want. You can say whatever you want. I don't care. You know, I'm the general manager. I'm going to do what I want to do. That kind of thing. You know, a lot of machismo. I love that.
Yeah.
So I'm in the press dining room at Chavez Ravine. And Doug Krikorian, the great Doug Krikorian, longtime L.A. sports writer, retired for many years. So Doug Krikorian was writing for the Long Beach Press-Telegram at the time, and apparently he had done something that annoyed Lasorda. Now, the reason we know this is because Tommy stormed into the press box. He's the general manager at the time, goes into the press dining room and says, where's Krikorian? he wanted to find Doug because Doug had written something ripping a move that Tommy had made. It was just hilarious because like a couple of days earlier, he had said, oh, no, you can say whatever you want. I don't care, you know, and all that stuff. And then I remember another sort of story. I remember in Vero Beach, this is a few years after he was managing, and it was St. Patrick's Day, St. Patty's Day in Vero Beach. And it was, you know, big deal in spring training. They brought out the green beer and green hats, and they had a big St. Patrick's party. This was actually the time that the O'Malley family was transitioning to Fox, to the Fox ownership for the Dodgers. But there was a big party. We were doing the show back to L.A., so it was on very late. And Tommy, who I had a pretty good relationship with as a media guy, and I wasn't close personal friends, but I thought, he knew who I was, which was, it's a big accomplishment when you're around the Dodgers. If Tommy Lasorda and Vin Scully knew who you were, that was a big deal. And I was lucky because both of them, I had a relationship, they knew my name and things, so that was pretty cool. I was very proud of that. But Lasorda was the general manager, later on. This is before that. So we're in Vero Beach at this gala St. Patrick's Day event. We're doing the show back to L.A., so it's late. It's like, midnight, 1 in the morning, whatever. We're doing a night show in L.A., Ben and Dave show. And it's a very rainy night in Vero Beach. Like, a huge monsoon is coming down. And nobody wanted to leave because it was really nasty weather, and they just want to stay and party. And when you run the Dodger Town, which is, I guess, something else now, but obviously they're not there. I think it's a baseball facility, training facility. But anyway, so Lasorda comes down. He is, he's wearing he's got a big green St. Patty's Day hat on, and he's enjoyed himself, Tommy. He's had a good time at the party. And he's in that room, and we were getting vintage Lasorda in this little small radio booth, which was the Dodger Talk booth that they did in Vero Beach. They did the shows for the postgame show, and it was awesome. I mean, Tommy was just, he didn't want to leave. It was really a lot of fun there, and I'll remember that. And also remember the last few years I would run into Tommy, and I think there was something, and he, as he got older, I think he his memory started to go a little bit. But I recall like this weird connection because I had started as like the teenage guy, and he was near the end. I was like, so he kind of remembered that I was one of the reporters that covered the team because there weren't a lot of guys left. And that were around in the days that he was managing. He's been a long time, and people lose jobs and do other things and things like that. So I love being around Lasorda. It was a lot of fun. And also the other stories about Tommy, the great rants. And people think the Kingman rant's the greatest rant. I think the one with Kurt Bevacqua is even better than the Kingman rant. And I know you've heard that over the years. Like the remember the Bevacqua rant from Lasorda?
Yeah, I'm trying to look for it right now.
Well, it was in 1982. the Dodgers are playing the Padres, and I guess the Dodger pitchers kept hitting Padre batters, and Kurt Bevacqua of the San Diego Padres, I guess he came out and they got into a dust-up. And then after the game, he called Tommy Lasorda that fat little Italian. and my man Tommy, imagine if you did that now. Could you imagine if Bevacqua came out and said, you fat little Italian? And today, oh my God, he'd be canceled.
Yeah.
He'd be canceled. Indeed. There'd be nothing left. But in those days, they're like, okay, we'll settle our, you know, this is how we do it. Men are being men. And do you say that? I'll get back at you. So the next day, Lasorda, when he was asked about it, he went on this awesome rant. And it's tremendous. I recommend it's on the internet. You can find it on the YouTube. I'm sure it's on there somewhere. But Jim Healy, one of my favorite radio shows when I was growing up, used to play it every once in a while. But his rant was essentially, he said, I'm trying to think of the funny line. Oh, Bevacqua couldn't hit water if he fell out of an effing boat. That was one. And then he said, the other line that was used as a drop was, I guarantee you, when I pitched, this is Lasorda, when I pitched and I was going to pitch against a team that had guys like on it like Bevacqua, I sent an effing limousine to get that CSer to make sure he was in the mother effing lineup. Oh, it was awesome. It was tremendous. And the late, great Joe McDonald, the big nasty L.A. radio legend, the Francesa of L.A. sports radio, Joe McDonald, he told me he was out there all the time, and he was friends with the star. But he told me and some of the other guys that covered the team way before I was around in the heyday of Tommy that – those rants, the rant about Kingman and the rant about Bevacqua, there were others that were not recorded with audio that were even better.
Yeah.
that were lost for time because it was just newspaper people and they were writing notes trying to, you know, repeat what he said. So I mean, he had so many of those moments. Remember the Philly Fanatic?
Oh, yeah.
Got into it with the Philly Fanatic. And also, Lasorda is responsible for the first mascot ever being ejected from a baseball game. You know which mascot?
Is it Mr. Met?
No, Yuppie, the Montreal Expos mascot. And the Expos mascot, who's I think the Montreal Canadiens mascot now, but Yuppie was on the dugout and would bang on the visiting dugout in Montreal. And the Expos had good teams, and the Dodgers, I remember they played, the Rick Monday home run was in Montreal.
Yeah.
Anyway, Lasorda was so upset with his mascot distracting his team by banging on the dugout that he went out and started screaming. And anyway, the mascot ended up getting ejected. First time in baseball history. Tommy Lasorda responsible for the first mascot ejection.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. So anyway, rest in peace, Tommy Lasorda. And he will be missed. I don't, you know, some people think he was phony. I never got that sense. I mean, I also remember one of the other things that popped in my head when you talk about Lasorda is I recall the Hollywood crowd. And they had this little area outside the Dodger clubhouse, this little cubbyhole thing outside the Dodger clubhouse.
Yeah.
And I remember the big stars of the day would be waiting outside because the way it worked is the media, they had a 10-minute cooling off period. Media would come in. You had to interview Lasorda first. Then you interview the players. Then you left. And then once everyone in the media left, Lasorda would welcome in, you know, some of the celebrities. I remember the day that it was a big deal. Frank Sinatra came to a Dodger game. Old Blue Eyes, music legend Frank Sinatra, and friends with Lasorda, and he came in this big limo caravan and all that. And it was a big to do. So again, rest in peace, Tommy. I'm sure I'm forgetting some stories that will pop up somewhere down the line. Now I have. If we have time for it, we can do a few. I have a few bizarre, odd, crazy things I've found on the internet stories.
Yeah, we can do that.
Did you see the story of the racing pigeon? That is the racing pigeon that could be killed now.
No, what country was this in?
All right, so this is a great story. I don't know how anyone really knows these type of things, but it's there. So the. This is from Australia. A racing pigeon traveled from Oregon to Australia 8,000 miles. 8,000 miles, all right, surviving. Imagine, I don't know that I could survive a trip on a boat across the Pacific. Right? So cross from the United States to all the way to Australia, and now the people of Australia, so paranoid about the boogeyman that they consider the bird a quarantine risk for the corona, and they're planning to kill it. Yeah. The bird arrived in Melbourne in the December 26th. It had been in a race October 29th, in Oregon. So from October 29th to December 26th, it crossed the Pacific. They think the working hypothesis is the pigeon, which is named Joe, by the way, Joe the Pigeon.
All right.
They think that Joe the Pigeon hitched a ride on a cargo ship across the Pacific. See, that's a smart move by the bird, because you might say maybe in the middle. Imagine if you're a bird in the middle of the Pacific. You're like, okay, I'm going to take off now. Well, you would die, right? There's nowhere to, you know, you couldn't make it back and all that. And so stayed on the boat. Cargo ship gets to Australia. And now the Australian Quarantine and Inspection Service are freaking out. And they're like, oh, this is unsafe.
Sounds like the great movie Outbreak. I don't know if you ever watched that movie back in the day. Dustin Hoffman, Rene Russo.
I feel like I did, but I don't remember, so you can repeat.
Kevin Spacey was in it, too. Let's see, because Dustin Hoffman was in the military, but he was a medical doctor, and him and Rene Russo had a splitting up. Anyways, what happened was that this monkey had a virus. It was called, like, the Mutabi virus.
Mutabi.
Yeah, and it went on this cargo ship. And it scratched one guy who had it as a pet, and he died on the boat. But the monkey was still in the cage, and so it went to a pet shop, I think in San Francisco or like in the middle of California, and then it was sold. It was sold after the owner of the store got bit by the monkey. And so you had this virus that was now being pushed around this area, this town in California. And Dustin Hoffman was trying to fight off this virus, but at the same time, Morgan Freeman and I want to say it was Donald Sutherland were colonels in the military, and they wanted to basically napalm the entire town.
Wow.
So they were talking about like just blowing up this entire town because they had the Mutabi virus. So Dustin Hoffman and Cuba Gooding Jr. were able to get the host monkey, extract the antibodies from it and then inject it into people to make them all whole again.
Oh,
so
that's tremendous movie knowledge, Geska. And I'm shocked that you remembered all those details. Or are you just reading off the internet?
No, it was the 90s. We got no internet right now. It was the 90s.
We don't have
movie.
Internet? Is that right? The internet is not working?
Listen,
what happened to the internet, man?
I'm happy the door's open right now.
Well, this thing's being held together by a tin can and some tape, and MacGyver's pocket knife is keeping this thing going.
When
right?
you go back to the studio, what's it going to be like? Because before you left, you were high hurdling over trash. Yeah. You know, the wall was taped up with sponsor logos, and those aren't there anymore. I wonder if you know how to get back into the building. It's been so long.
Wow. Well, I was supposed to go pick up the mail.
You got a lot.
Yeah, I haven't been able to do that because of some stuff. And I'll get back there. But I have a feeling we'll probably be doing this kind of setup for a while. So I don't think, even when things get back, I have a feeling the setup will continue later on. But anyway.
Yeah.
All right. What other story? I had a couple other bizarre stories that I saw surfing around the interweb. Did you see the magic mushroom story?
No. What's the shout out Super Mario's? I don't know. What is the magic mushroom story?
No, not those kind of magic mushrooms. All right, I'm going to send you the story here. Well, you don't have internet, but your phone's working.
It
right?
is. It is. I got Rent-A-Person up. We could talk.
What's that?
Rent-A-Person who does nothing in Tokyo.
Oh, yeah. That's a good story. That's on my list. Well, we can do that right now. So, yeah, in Japan. This is, I think this is a legit story. I've never heard of this newspaper, but it's the Japanese National Daily since 1922. Is it the Mainichi? Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Am I saying that right?
It's good.
I've never been to Japan. You been to Japan?
No. I do want to go to Tokyo, though. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. My dad used to, one of the big trips he went on when he was working as an engineer was to Japan. And he loved it. He always would tell the story about going to Japan and how cool it was and how, you know, it was just amazing. The whole, you know, just opened his eyes to this whole, it was really cool for him. But anyway, so in Tokyo, this 37-year-old guy rents himself out to other people. He's like, I think that's like what prostitutes do. Anyway, he rents himself out to other people to, quote, do nothing. And he has been apparently overwhelmed with people on social media and whatnot, very happy with his support. I guess in the Japanese culture, apparently, you're supposed to work.
Yeah.
And you're not supposed to be a lazy slug. And this guy's a lazy slug. He'd do well here in America.
Well, and there's a couple of things, though. So he can eat and drink with you and give simple feedback, but he can't do anything more. This is better than Cameo.
Yeah, well, considering now he charges 10,000 yen,
yeah,
which works out to be $96 per per request.
Yeah.
Oh, and you know, I should really charge in Cameo. I should do yen because it sounds more impressive.
Oh boy,
right?
No, because if you charge in yen, it's going to have a higher dollar amount. You don't want to have
no. Because $40 in yen. 40 U.S. dollars is 4,000 Japanese yen.
Yeah, so
that's great, though. My price on Cameo is $4,000.
That might intimidate some people, though.
Yeah, but it's yen.
I know, but people don't know any better.
Well, I could do pesos, right?
Yeah, you could do pesos. Yes,
I could do pesos. That's $788 in the Mexican peso.
Yeah,
so that's more impressive than $40.
Now, would you rather?
I've not been to Mexico. I used to work in San Diego. I never spent time in Mexico.
Yeah, don't go.
So how much does how far does the peso go? If I had 788 Mexican pesos, how far would that go?
It'd go pretty far.
It would.
Yeah.
So, okay. How much are drinks? How many pay? If I went to a bar in Tijuana, how much are drinks?
Oh, you can get drinks really cheap. Beers or even just their well drinks like liquor and some kind of...
You're not supposed to drink the water, though.
No. I made that bad decision once and
threw it. Montezuma's Revenge, right?
Yeah, yeah. I did it on a wedding, on a cruise down there to Cabo. Not good. But yeah, a beer will get you, I mean, $2.
How much, though? How much?
Like $2, $3.
Two U.S. dollars?
Yeah.
Oh, and they take... So that's like 39 pesos.
Yeah. It's good. Okay. Now, it's not a beer. It's not a beer in a bottle. It's a beer in a plastic cup. But when you're in TJ, you don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
But usually you're at that age of like 18, 19, 20, 21 years old where you're down there. I don't recommend going to Mexico anytime soon.
You're experiencing. You want to stay off the roads away from the fake federales that are pretending to be federales that are not. But even the federales, I've heard from many people that cut them a check.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's no different than here in California where you have mayors in cities like Los Angeles that cut off your power if you're hanging out with people and whatnot. So,
well, and just keep putting new restrictions in even though they're not working. They just keep keep doing that. It's good. Good strategy. Sound strategy.
Yeah. Now, would you rather be this guy or here's the thing that sucks. Is that this guy has something going for him that's really good. 37 years old, $96 to do fucking nothing. But then you get the females that do nothing but play video games, and they charge you to watch them.
Yeah, see, I like money, but I also have like things like ambition and work ethic.
Yeah.
And I feel like you need to have a purpose in life and those kind of things. And so I wouldn't do it. When I have time off, and I had a lot before, you know, I had my situation with my dad, but I was on vacation for a couple of weeks, and it was tough. I admit it. I'm a workaholic as much as you can be in a job like radio, but it's not like a real job, like, you know, working in a factory or driving a truck or something like that. But I put a lot of work into it. So
yeah.
Anyway, all right. Well, the magic mushroom story here. So this is I'll say. So some guy here. This is in the United States. He ended up in the hospital. He had organ failure. Why? He injected himself with a tea made from magic mushrooms, psychedelic mushrooms. And they claim that these magic mushrooms started growing in his veins.
Wow.
Yeah. This is a Journal of the Academy of Consultation Liaison Psychiatry. Wow, that's a mouthful. The unidentified man 30 ended up surviving. So he did survive. And imagine that. I mean, hey, what's going on? Well, there's magic mushrooms growing in my veins. Somebody better tell Joe Rogan so he doesn't go out in the Amazon there and the ayahuasca, suddenly he starts injecting it in his veins. Man,
I don't know if you know about this, but here in L.A., you have certain therapists now that are actually, they're doing different kind of psychedelic therapy now with their patients. They're using MDMA, which is ecstasy, and ketamine.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I read something the UFC is like investigating whether to give their fighters some of those psychedelic drugs.
That's fascinating.
I think I read that.
They used to do that back in the day. I know that in Europe. And then, of course, it's illegal here in the United States. But now they've slowly allowed this to go down with therapists and their patients.
Yeah, it's interesting. All right, let's put the baby to bed, Gascon. Yes?
Yes.
All right. We will be back on Saturday and Sunday. Podcast all week in the fifth hour. Remember, Cameo. Gascon's on there also. One of you forced him to say a really nice monologue about me a while ago, which is very nice. And you can get on Cameo. You can send me a message. Just type our name in, my name or Gascon's, and all of that available. It's not free, but it's not that much. And as always, follow us on social media, Twitter, Ben Maller, Instagram, Ben Maller on Fox, Facebook, Ben Maller Show. And you're not on Facebook, you're on Instagram and you're on Twitter.
That's right.
All right. Find Gascon as well. There you go. All right. Have a great day. We'll catch you next time.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific.